嗨，你们要录音吗？你们要录音吗？你们可以给我一个 copy 吗？If you record it, could you give me a copy of the audio file?
Oh, I'm, yeah. 是你在录音吗？
对，
你到时候可不可以给那个
file 给老师？
对，给他的。So have you bring your fresh disk?
Sorry?
Have you bring your fresh disk? We can just.
Yes, I have even my computer and everything.
Later I can put the file into your disk.
Oh, excellent. That would be possible.
Okay. 各位老师，各位同学，我们今天很高兴邀请到澳洲 La Trobe University， 刚刚拿到博士学位的Dr. Rick DeBussy。Okay， 你可以发成根据那个 Rick 讲法，你可以发成 DeBussy。Okay， 英文发音。所以他是这个我们原学里面所谓 typologist 类型学的专家，然后他对我们台湾这个布农语也有很深入的研究，所以我们今天很荣幸请到他来为我们来做个他最近做这个研究的一个介绍。他今天给我们讲的这个题目是 argument alignment in the return of the noon， 然后他会给我们很多这些有趣的问题，会给我们一些答案。
Thank you. I hope I don't mind that I hope that you don't mind I'll talk in English.
Yeah,
because that's a bit easier for me.
How about Dutch?
I can do it. Oh, well, if you want to. But Dutch is actually very difficult. I mean, you have to translate all the weird terms into Dutch. TLT, we normally don't prepare slides, and that has something to do with the old-fashioned attitudes in our institutes.
Right, my kind of people.
but there are many examples, and if you have any problems, you want to point something out, I can use the PDF that I think Joyce wonderfully prepared for me. I'm going to talk a little bit about argument alignment in Takivata and Bunun today, and this talk I already gave, it's more or less in the same form at RCLT, and the reason why I give it here again is, one, because I was a little bit lazy, but the main reason was because there are lots of people that can give me lots of good comments on this paper, or this paper in the making, I hope. So if you have any remarks, any criticisms, or any questions, please feel free to throw them into the group. What I'm going to try to tell you today is, or to explain today, is that in Takivata and Bunun there are a lot of different mechanisms that influence the expression and the, well, let's call it semantic implication of arguments in a clause. You could call this argument expression, or what's the common term? Predicate argument, argument realization, predicate argument structure. But I don't call it argument realization at this point because in some cases you can't really realize your arguments. They're just implied by, I mean, semantically implied, but you can't really express them. And we will see some examples of that later on in the paper. Just a little bit of background. I did research on Bunun, on the Takivatan dialect of Bunun for the last 4 years and a half, more or less. Well, 4 years. And I kind of recently, as Dylan said, I recently finished my PhD thesis. That's kind of a description of Takivatan morphosyntax. It was supposed to be a full grammar, but turns out that some of the languages in Taiwan are a bit too complicated to write a full grammar in 3 years. So I decided to do the half of it and a little bit more thorough. I'll give you a short introduction. Are there many people that are not aware of Austronesian languages here? Because normally I'll have to introduce where it's situated and things like that. But anyway, Bunun, one of the officially recognized languages, indigenous languages of Taiwan, belongs to the Austronesian language family, has five dialects. It's mainly spoken in the mountains of central Taiwan. Well, I mean, mountains, it's a bit spread out all over the country, but somewhere in the center. The heartland is somewhere in Nantou. I mean, that's what most people assume, at least. I think that's not incorrect. But there are Bunun populations in Kaohsiung, Hualien, and Nantou, and Taidong as well, if I'm not mistaken. There are, according to the latest population counts, about 50,000 people that are ethnically Bunun, but not all of those people speak Bunun. And I extrapolated from how the situation is in the village where I did research that about 60% probably speaks Bunun. I mean, you can say that they speak Bunun. Depends on what you define as speaking, but how you define speaking. But they can speak it reasonably fluent. Language transfer to the younger generations has completely stopped. Now there are five Bunun dialects, and I think it was the Japanese anthropologists that subdivided them into north, central, and south. The southern dialect is Ishbukun, which some people in this room know quite well. The central dialects are Takivatan and Takbanuat, and Takivatan is a dialect that I worked on. And the northern dialects are Takitudu and Takipaka. They're kind of under-researched at the moment. There is very little data available, although some people are working on it. So Takivatan is mainly spoken in two villages in Hualien, which you can see on the map on page 2. Just bring it up just because it looks so nice. There are some Takivatan in Nantou, but they usually live in mixed villages with Takbanuat and Ishbukun speakers together, and in those situations, the smaller dialects tend to drown out, or they tend to undergo quite a strong influence from the majority dialect. In Hualien, the Takivatan village is purely Takivatan. There is nobody else there. Well, one or two other people, but and then a foreigner sometimes. That it's basically pure Takivatan, and they mainly are in Wanzhongxiang, that's like this area of Hualien, and I mainly lived in Mayuanchun, that's Mayuan village. There is a small group of Takivatan that from Mayuan moved to Qimei in the mountains next to the sea, those are actually the same as, I mean, those are very closely related to the people in Mayuan, and they kind of moved there during the last 50 years or something. That's about it for the introduction. Argument alignment now. In many Austronesian languages, as some of you or many of you know, and probably some of you know better than me, argument alignment is a bit of a problem, and traditional people have struggled with traditional concepts of transitivity. There are different people have proposed different analyses for the problems that you find in these Austronesian languages. The argument alignment system that many of them have is usually described as something like a focus system or a Philippine-style voice system, or you have a couple of different names, and some people like some terminology and others hate some terminology, and it's a whole messy fight at the moment. But what I will try to do, I'll try to look at Takivatan on itself. I'm not going to talk about other languages, and I don't want to make claims about other languages at this point. What I will do is I'll take the opposite way that most people take. Most people try to integrate everything that has to do with argument alignment into one system. So you say you have a nominative accusative system or an ergative absolutive system, and these are the active forms and these are the passive forms. We will have a look today at which mechanisms, grammatical mechanisms, morphological mechanisms, are involved in how arguments are expressed in a, or are aligned in a clause. And with alignment, I mean how core arguments are either expressed or implied in a prototypical clause. So, and expression and or implication, those are two important concepts, because, as I said before, not all arguments that are implied in some by some mechanisms in the clause or in on the verb are also expressed in the clause, and some of them can't be expressed. So if we go to 2.1, and we come to the first important way in which a clause in Takivatan can in some way indicate which arguments are important, or in which the language can express which arguments are important in a certain clause. And those are what I call the focus suffixes. Some people hate the term focus. I don't like it that much, but I don't really know a better term for it. If you call it voice, then people start to complain as well, because it's not really voice, then they would argue. If you call it something else, then I don't know how I would call it. You could call it, well, anyway, I call it focus suffixes at this point. And I analyze Takivatan Bunun as having three types of focus suffix, focus marking. You have an actor focus, which is zero marked, an undergoer focus, which has un, and a locative focus, which has an. And some people that are acquainted with Austronesian languages, they will probably ask, yes, but you have some prefixes, instrumental and things like that. And we will come to that, but I believe that it's I believe that it's for Takivatan Bunun better to separate prefixes and infixes from the suffixes. And I have certain reasons for that. Some are semantic, some are kind of cross-linguistic, some are actually, there are good syntactic reasons for separating those two things and considering them to be two interacting systems rather than one paradigm. And if you want to talk about that, we can do that maybe after the talk, because otherwise it will get a very long, long discussion. But you'll have to bear with me. Suppose we have three focus types that are expressed by suffixation, one by zero, one by un, one by an. The undergoers, they can, in Takivatan Bunun, be patients, beneficiaries, or instruments, but if you have an undergoer focus without any prefix, typically this suffix, this undergoer focus suffix, marks a patient. Not always, but most of the time. And then, well, I have something about focus. It's not pragmatic focus, but people that work on Austronesian, they usually understand that more or less, although they might not accept it. I'll give you some examples in 1, 2, and 3. So you have Sida malungangausta madokta. The shaman took the millet. So Sida is an agent focus construction or an actor focus construction. Zero marked. Means that the agent, so malungangausta, the shaman, is basically in topic position in the clause. So the focus is the topic in Bunun for now. Madokta is the undergoer. It's in non-focus position, so it's not topicalized. In the second clause, Shidaun Asik. So I translated this as they gathered the shrubs, but if you desperately want to topicalize the shrubs, you can say something like the shrubs were being gathered by them. But it's not really a passive, I mean, it's not really a passive construction, but you might translate it like that in English. The third one is a locative focus. Marto pasidanin rabul vanis. We are able in that place to catch deer and wild boar. And the locative focus here, so pasida an, the an suffix, indicates that there is some strong pragmatic stress on the location of the action, which in this case is not really expressed in the clause. But it's inferred from the context. I mean, it's not even inferred from the context. It means something like in that place, and that place is something that the speaker in this text was talking about a couple of minutes before he uttered this clause or this stretch of text. By the way, most of my examples are from a corpus that I recorded from native speakers. But in these examples, I sometimes kind of cleaned up the clauses, the sentences, because otherwise it would get so convoluted that I had to explain all kinds of other things that didn't have anything to do with the focus system. Example 3 has already a smallish problem. That's that the locative argument is not expressed in the clause. And I would argue, but that's also open for discussion, that if you have a locative focus, the locative argument in such constructions is a core argument of the clause. And I have certain nice syntactic criteria to determine a difference, distinguish core from peripheral arguments in Bunun. Which I also will explain a little bit later on, probably. And otherwise, you can ask me about it. But there is a contrast between locative core arguments in Bunun and peripheral locative arguments. They have different properties. Or in Takivatan, in the Takivatan dialect at least. Often, these three focus types, they were associated with, dynamic verbs that express transitive concepts. I almost wanted to say transitive verbs, but that would kind of contradict with what I'm trying to argue, is that it's maybe a bit difficult to determine the transitivity of some verb. You know? But in any case, focus types are usually associated with events that express something like an agent does something to an undergoer, or for somebody, or using somebody. I don't know what. Things like that. Usually it's an agent does something to an undergoer. We will see that most focus types are also relevant for non-dynamic events, so for stative events, non-transitive event types. So for example, stative events or locative directional verbs, they can occur. They can get a undergoer focus or a locative focus form sometimes. So I'll discuss the locative. The agent focus is pretty straightforward. I'll discuss the undergoer focus and the locative focus, just because they are so funny and there are some weird things are going on with them. An undergoer focus suffix stresses or topicalizes, whatever you want to call it, the undergoer of a construction. And the funny thing is that they do that not by not changing, or that does not imply that the argument order in any way changes. So if you look at example 4 and 5, si daun malangangaus ta asik. So this is a couple of spelling mistakes here. This should be in example 4, si da malangangaus ta asik. So the un, everything from the glottal stop onwards, you can delete that from si da. And the ta should also go in on malngangausta. So if you would say something, I'll can I indicate that somewhere? Is that clear or am I a bit fuzzy now? So here the un should go because this is a zero marked form, and the a doesn't occur in the interlinear translation. So that's the ta. Sorry. That's also a spelling mistake for me. And similarly, in example 5, the da is also not present. So if you say, si da malngangaus asik, the shaman took or gathered the shrubs, that's an agent focus construction, and you see that agent comes before undergoer. That's the typical argument order in Takivatan Bunun. If you turn that into an undergoer focus construction, si daun malngangaus asik, nothing changes. There's only a suffix that is added. So if you have full MPs, the argument order remains the same. However, if you have case marking, I know that I had this remark from Laurie at the Academia Sinica that you shouldn't call this case marking. And I agree with that, but I would call it constituent marking. How do you want me to call it? Something like that. Sorry?
Phrase marker.
Phrase marker, yes. Do you mind?
Could I just ask one question related to this example?
Yes.
Is there a semantic difference in understanding the shrub? Is it, we would expect, for example, in Philippine languages, that the one, first one would be indefinite and the second one would be dead.
Ah, no. Or at least I can't find it. And you can prove that in the corpus if you look at forms that get this. You just deleted this ta here. That's kind of a demonstrative definiteness marker, and it can. I mean, depending if it's extra focus, it can come both here and here. It's grammatically all possible. So you wouldn't expect that to be possible. So. There's no change of argument order, but there is a change of, I'll just call it case marking for the moment if you don't mind, because otherwise it will get very confusing. So there is a change of case marking, and you can only see that in the pronominal paradigms. Only personal pronouns have a difference between something that I call F and N. F is the case that indicates the focused agent, typically. N is the neutral case, which indicates everything else. So if in the clause, it's a bit of a strange split, and that's one of the reasons why transitivity is a bit of a problem in Bunun. And we will come to that a little bit later on. So if you, in example 6, if you say, antalam ak su'u, I answer you, if you would turn that into a undergore focus, you would get something like, antalamun daku su'u, and the daku would not go into the focused agent case anymore because it's not a focused agent anymore. It's a non-focused agent. And it will go into the neutral case. So funnily enough, you have two neutral cases in this clause. One a non-focused agent and one a focused patient. So the patient will be in a neutral case disregarding of whether it is focused or non-focused. So that's the first thing. So you get a bit of a funny thing. You don't get, the order doesn't change, but the case changes. That's relevant because we will come for with some prefixes, both order and case change. The second interesting thing about this undergore focus suffix is that it can occur on adjectives and on locative verbs. And many people in previous research didn't pick up on that because they didn't have first of all, they didn't use a large enough corpus. And secondly, because if you use elicitation, people will almost always say that such forms are not really, don't mean anything or something like that. But that's usually because they're not contextually embedded. So you need an appropriate context to get these forms. But they occur not extremely uncommonly in my corpus. So han is to go to or to be at sometimes also, but it's usually it expresses movement. If you say hanun aip mimpantu, if you would say han aip mimpantu, it would mean something like that person went to become a student, went to some place to become a student. If you make an undergore focus of the han, so hanun aip mimpantu, it means something like she was sent there to become a student. And in English, you translate this by some causative-like thingy, but it's not really clear that grammatically, in this case, this is really a causative construction. Because especially if the agent of the normal, the non-UF construction is animate, you cannot introduce a causer into this construction. So it's implied, but it can't really be expressed. So that's a bit of a funny thing. I've got a second example in 9, so where it gets, well, the undergore focus here is kind of translated, was translated by my informants as an imperative. Well, it wasn't really translated. They said, well, you use it if you want to tell your children that they have to put the candies in back into the box, they can't eat it, for example, and you go back to the kitchen and put the candies back. Hanun daida madengpus kasi. So go there and put the candies back inside. Here the agent is not really expressed, but that's not really very uncommon. I mean, things are often not expressed in Bunun and in some other Austronesian languages as well, or Formosan languages. There is some kind of an external agentive force that influences the agent to do the going to the kitchen to put the candies back into the box. So that's with animate agents. With with stative intransitive concepts and inanimate agents, an undergoer focus suffix has often an effect that is very close, that is similar to direct causation. So it's often, or it is possible then, to promote the causer as a core argument of the construction, and the agent of the original AF construction, so actor-focused construction, becomes some kind of an undergoer of the undergoer-focused construction. So in 10, makai masihal titia sihalunai pi siya pianawat, you only have to look at the second clause here. Sihal is put, if you put that in the undergoer focus, it means something like to make something good or to, it's very difficult to translate this in English, to cause something to become good or to preserve something in a good way or something like that, to good something, to make something good. What happened here is that an agent was introduced, he. In this case, this is referring to the hunter. So if the meat was good, if the meat from the hunt was very good meat, then he, the hunter, had to store it well for his wife. So you don't have an explicitly expressed undergoer here, or at least not a patient of Shihal. So the implied patient of Shihalun would be Titi, the meat, which is not expressed because it's in the previous clause. The funny thing is that you can introduce an extra agent here, so the causer of the construction. So that would mean, I don't know about you, but I would say that's kind of a classical causative construction almost. Now, the funny thing about these undergoer focus forms with stative verbs, with stative verbs, is that they can never take the normal stative prefix ma. So normally the actor focused form of shihal would usually be ma shihal, so with the stative prefix ma, which is very common throughout the Austronesian world. If it's an undergoer focus, you have to drop it. If you want to put on a prefix of any kind, a verbal prefix of any kind, if you want to attach a prefix of any kind to shiha, you have to take either a causative prefix or an associative prefix, and that should be p or k. I wrote me there, but that should be p, because otherwise somebody in the audience might ask me why the me will comes up. So, I mean, the thing is, in Takifata and Bunun, you can ellipse almost everything if it can be recovered from the context, except for the verbal roots of the clause. That's a bit difficult. So you could say that forms like this, like the one in 10, shihalun, are actually kind of ellipted causative forms. So it would actually be pishihalun, and the p would be dropped then. So that's a not unreasonable explanation. So that's the undergoer focus constructions. Locative focus constructions now. The locative focus seems to behave in different way as the undergoer focus. But it's a bit hard to determine that because locative focus is pretty rare as the head of a predicate at least. Locative focus is often used in nominalizations but not so often in verbal forms. So it's a bit hard to determine how it influences the case marking and the order of the arguments. Also because in the majority of locative constructions, you either have no explicitly expressed argument or one explicitly expressed argument. And if you have one explicitly expressed argument, especially if that's not a location, it's a bit hard to determine how the argument order works, and probably also unless it's a pronoun, how the case marking works. So I'll give you in 11 an example of such a construction without any arguments. Na ka lumakan masihala. So I translated this as this land is suitable for building houses on it, because that's what it means. But what it literally would mean is something like making houses in this place here, or in such a place, is something good. Or it's good to make, it's suitable or good or preferential to build houses in this place. It's very hard to translate in English again, but that's not really relevant. You have an undergore, a locative focus construction with no explicitly expressed arguments. Everything is inferred from the context. Oh, and here actually, the building houses is incorporated in the verb. In the house, the house building, the verb ka lumak is actually a kind of a verb derived, a denominal verb, so it's a bit of a complex situation. But in example 12, you have a locative focus construction with one argument, which is unfortunately not the locative argument. Kavava nabalivan mitahulus. I will go immediately to buy your clothes there. And you might wonder why you would have a locative focus here, because you have an explicitly expressed patient argument. So your clothes, which is yours here, expressed by a first person inclusive, but that's not relevant here. But anyway, why don't you have an undergore focus construction? Because this is part of a real conversation, and there was a little girl, and she was saying to her grandmother, "I want some new clothes. I want some new clothes. Can't we go to Raceway to buy some new clothes? Can't we go to Raceway?" And the mother said, the grandmother said, "Well, wait for a moment. We will go there in a minute to buy your clothes." So, hence the locative focus. So that's about all you can say about the unmarked cases of the locative focus. The locative suffix, focus suffix, is also used in a kind of an atypical way for cross-referencing the agents of verbs of perception and cognition. So that's typically those, the agents that are marked in such a way have a very low agency. For example, to help, dangat, can get a locative focus, because the helper is typically or is often not very heavily involved or not very actively involved in the helping. I mean, it's still the person that is helped that's doing the action. Just one example in 13, Haita Masihal Saduan Kaningu. The translation is a bit difficult to relate to the construction. There is a beautiful movie on TV. What this literally means is there is something good. I see a picture, or how do I have to translate this? In any case, the person that does the seeing is here cross-referenced the person is cross-referenced to by the locative focus form on Saduan. And you might wonder why that happens. I think it's not so completely absurd, because you have in many languages, or in quite a lot of languages, you have a non-canonical marking for lowly agentive agents. For example, in German you have these dative marking of with verbs of emotion or experience. For example, das gefällt mir. It's befalls me, something like that. I like it, anyway. But the I is marked with the dative. So this is kind of an analogous case, but then with locative focus. Just like the undergore focus suffix, locative focus can occur on non-dynamic events, and it actually does so a lot easier than the undergore focus. Unlike the undergore focus, if you have such an, you can still retain the normal neutral verbal prefix in such construction. So in example, a little bit back, in example 10, I said that if you have shihalun, you can't have the prefix ma, so the neutral status prefix ma. In 14, if you have a you can have a locative focus version of shihalan, but you can have it with the stative prefix ma. So ma shihalan dalakuna, the land was very good there. And the locative focus here cross refers to dalak, so the field or the land of the ground or something like that. And the stative and dalak is kind of a locative argument of this clause. Now, 14 is a bit funny, or it's a bit special, because in a vast majority of locative focus construction, the locative argument is not explicitly expressed, and in many cases, my consultants indicate that it is impossible to express a locative argument explicitly there, so you have to infer it from the context. But if you ask them, what does a locative focus mean here, what does this an mean, they say, oh, it's there in this place or something like that. So it has some locative meaning. Another problem is 15. Padangi an kasila han balukku. Put the salt in the bowl. Here you have a locative focus. Do you remember I told in the beginning that there is a clear distinction between core locative arguments and peripheral locative arguments, and this han baluku is a, what I marked as place, is a peripheral locative argument. It has a preposition. Prepositional phrases are typically not core, and they are certainly not in takifatan bunun. It's always clause final, whereas core locative arguments do tend to be clause final, but they don't have to be. They can get more to the front of the clause. It cannot be topicalized, whereas a core locative argument can be topicalized, so by left dislocation. So you kind of take it out of the sentence, put it in front of the sentence, and put in a general Austronesian linker. Ah, it's topicalization. You can't do that with han baluku. Now, it's a bit funny, though, that you have a locative focus marking on the verb, but then a peripheral place argument in the clause. Why wouldn't you have a locative core argument? And I don't really know. So, yes, that's a problem. So, an example, 16 is just an example of what a locative core argument does. So, if you have kama uka iti sanglaf, you see that it's a locative core argument because it's not in a clause final position. It can't have a preposition. And I don't show that here, but you can say something like iti a kama uka sanglaf. So, you can front it. You can left dislocate it, sorry. So, that was a long little section. So, in conclusion, you have in Bunun a ternary distinction between actor focus, undergore focus, locative focus. Unlike what some people assumed in the past, this ternary distinction is relevant for dynamic verbs, stative verbs, or dynamic concepts, stative concepts, locative directional concepts, and it can apply to transitive and intransitive concepts. So that's a bit of a problem for transitivity, I would say. Then there is the other problem, that if you have an undergore focus or a locative focus, the effects that it has on the clause, on the argument realization, and on the interpretation of the verb and of the clause depends a little bit on the semantics of the verb or on the verbal subtype, the subcategorization of the verb. Then another problem is that if you want to consider these things to be voice, then you'll have to explain why they typically don't add or delete arguments. Because if you looked at most of my examples, the number of arguments in a clause stays constant in most. If you switched from, for example, agent focus to undergore focus, and the case of the pronouns changed, but their word order didn't change, and you didn't have any promotion or demotion of arguments, so you didn't have some arguments coming from peripheral positions into core positions or going from core positions to peripheral positions. So that's a problem if you want to analyze them as some active versus passive voices, because if you have a passive, what typically happens is that your agent get demoted into peripheral position, and and your patient goes in the subject slot. Similar if you would, that's about it. Yes. So that's a problem. So, and then I always had like a nice functional linguistic final sentence. Their effect seems to be motivated by functional semantic rather than by syntactic factors. It's a good, nice discussion brewing here, and lots of yelling back and forth coming up. So that's where the suffixes. Now, Takivatam Bunun has a gigantic set of verbal quite large set of verbal prefixes. In my PhD thesis, I give a nice overview of all, or not of all of them, but of quite a bit of them. I stopped counting somewhere at 250, but many of them are not really completely productive, so you can take that with a little bit of a, you can be a little bit skeptical about this, but there are lots of them. In table one, I give a couple of examples of commonly used verbal prefixes. You have the locative prefixes, which typically only occur with locative verbs, verbal stems, or with certain nouns that indicate location. You have event type prefixes, and that's probably something that people want to discuss about at some point. You have ma, which marks dynamic events. You have ma, which marks stative events. You have mi, which marks stative events. You have an incoative marker, min, and you have a couple of others. Then you have things that I call participant orientation prefixes, which are an instrumental marker, ish, a beneficiary marker, ki, and a resultative object marker, sin. And now I expect some people to wonder, why aren't these focused? Why don't they belong to the focus system, especially the ish, maybe the kin and the si, and why also not the dynamic event marker ma? Because in most languages, people would say that's an agent-focused marker. Well, the reason for that is that if you would analyze ma as a focus prefix, then I can't see a good reason why your stative event marker ma or mi shouldn't be a focus prefix, because they also operate in the same paradigm. Now you already have one, two, three. Three focus prefixes, two focus suffixes, that's five focus types. And then you have the participant orientation prefixes, ish, instrumental focus, that's six focus types. If you want key included, that's seven focus types. If you want scene included, that's eight focus types. That gets a bit of a strange analysis. There is another reason why I didn't consider them to be part of some focus paradigm, if you desperately want to call it like that. That's because the prefixes tend to behave in a morphologically coherent way. And their behavior is often quite different from that of the suffixes. For example, all of the event type prefixes, they have causative variants, in which the ma, the m is substituted for p, and they have associative variants in which the m is substituted for k. So you have ma pa ka. For the dynamic events, you have ma pi ki for the stative events, for both of the stative markers, and you have min pin kin for the incoative events. For participant orientation prefix, you don't have these alternate versions. But that's a little bit not relevant for the argument alignment discussion at this point. I'm going to talk mainly at this point about the verbal prefixes of the third kind, so participant orientation prefixes, ish, ki, and sin. It is clear that they encode some sort of pragmatic information about participants, and it's not clear to me that they topicalize participants. So in that sense, they are not exactly the same as the focus suffixes. But they are, from a pragmatic point of view, they are somewhat similar. So if you see what I said in the second paragraph on page 9, although it's sometimes possible for participant orientation prefixes to occur on non-dynamic verbal stems, this only occurs very rarely, so I haven't attested any PO prefix on a locative directional stem. Now, the funny thing about 17 is also that istamadan udinunan is that you have a combination of an instrumental prefix with a locative suffix. If ish would be part of a focus paradigm, you wouldn't you would expect them to be in complementary distribution. You wouldn't expect prefixes and suffixes to be able to occur on the same verb. Although there are ways in which you can explain those things in a paradigmatic way. Now, these three prefixes, so the instrumental marker is, the beneficiary marker ki, the resultative object marker sin, they behave in one other, they behave different from focus suffixes in one other way. Focus suffixes, as I explained a minute ago, they retain argument order, but they change case. Participant orientation prefixes, they both change argument, they both change constituent order and case. So I can demonstrate that with the examples 18 and 19. If you say maswat amu hutan, so that's a dynamic prefix ma, swat grow. Amu is an agent, second person plural agent. Hutan yams is the patient, so you people grow yams. If you would make let's say a resultative object construction out of that, and I say let's say because that's what my informants gave me, haida mu madia sin swat hutan. Now the construction here is a bit more complicated because you have this existential auxiliary haida, which causes the agent of the event to move from the main verb to the first auxiliary. That's kind of a regular grammatical process that happens all over the language. What's funny about mu is that it's not into the F case anymore. It's not a focused agent case anymore. It's a neutral case. Why? Well, because it's not a focused agent anymore. Sinswat puts focus on the patient, hutan. That's the same as focus suffixes. However, if you look at examples 20 and 21, masaif bunun epi en mana kaimang sutia sinsaif epi bunun, and we look in 21, we only look at sinsaif epi bunun. What you see is that if you have, so what I want to prove with 18, 19 is that these prefixes change the case of the arguments, so they reshuffle the case assignments. In 20 and 21, you see that they also reshuffle the order of the arguments. So in 20, the bunun is the agent, so masaif bunun ip, and ip is the patient. Bunun agent comes before patient. That's the normal, that's the neutral order of the arguments in takivatan bunun. In 21, sinsaif ip bunun, the ip, the patient, comes before the agent, and that's triggered by the use of the prefix sin. Is that not too convoluted? So, in general, you can say that these prefixes both change order and case. I kind of combined both of them in examples 22 and 23 with the beneficiary prefix ki. If you say ma saif aksu tilas, so I give you rise, so the agent is in immediate postverbal position, so in the focused agent case, the beneficiary is su is in the second position, second argument slot. Tilas is in the third argument slot. That's also pretty normal. That's the regular order of arguments. So you have beneficiary coming before patient, and agent becoming coming before beneficiary. If you put a beneficiary prefix on saif, as in 23, na kisai vak su tilas. What I did was, in this case, I asked my informants to keep all the participants in the same order and in the same case, and then see how the meaning changes here. So if you say kisaif aksu tilas, this does not mean I I give rise to you, it means you give rise to me. So what you, what in 22 was the focused agent case and expressed an agent now expresses the beneficiary of the construction. What was in 22 the undergoer, the beneficiary, su, has now become the agent. So the positions are switched, the cases are switched, and tilas is, of course, it's constant because nothing was done to it. I mean, it's just, it wasn't really cross-referenced by any of the verbal affixation. So from the examples, you can deduce that that unlike the focus suffixes, these participant orientation prefixes, they have some kind of a, well, I'm not really sure if I can call it a passive-like behavior or an applicative-like behavior, in the sense that they kind of, yeah, it's hard to say if it's promoting or demoting arguments, but they reshuffle the arguments in some way, in some very thorough way. Now, the problem with analyzing these things as passives or applicatives is that, again, I already said that a couple of minutes ago, that if you have, in most languages, passive constructions, they demote agents to a peripheral position, and they promote, or, well, they don't really promote the undergoer, but in any case, they put the undergoer in subject position. In the case of applicatives, what you normally would have is that an argument from a peripheral position gets promoted into a core position. And in none of the examples here, that really happens, because the arguments that are in the sentence, in the clauses, sorry, they just work in the neutral sentences. They were already core arguments. In the sentences with the PO prefixes, they remain core. The only thing that happens is that their case changes. There's also no deletion of arguments or something like that. It's just, it remains always constant, all constant. So I think it's hard to speak of this as kind as promotion or demotion of arguments. I just call it argument reordering. So that's the participant orientation prefixes. I said something when I talked about table one about all these prefixes, that there was something going on with sorry. Table one, that many of these, the prefixes, the locative prefixes and the event type prefixes, they have causative and associative variants. I'm not going to talk about the associatives. If you really want to know about that, I can always send you a copy of my very thick work of art, which you can then peruse at leisure. But the causatives are relevant here. We already saw in a couple of minutes ago also that in some undergoer focused constructions you could get causative prefixes, and that these causative prefixes would get deleted and things like that. I'll first go to table 2 on page 11. What these causative prefixes look like for some of these verbs is, like, for example, if you have a neutral dynamic prefix like ma, so ma indicates dynamic events. You have a causative variant pa, which means if you have masaif to give, you can get pasaif to cause to give or to make give or something like that. With stative events, you have that as well. Masihal becomes pisihal, so masihal good becomes pisihal to make good. Incoative prefix min can become pin. The elative prefix, well, I call it elative, so that means direction towards. Mun can become pun, so mun towards, pun cause to go towards, ablative maisna from, paisna cause to come from. Now, it's pretty clear that in all cases these prefixes have causative semantics. It's not so clear that they are syntactically causative all the time. I'll give you examples in a minute. Causative forms, they tend to occur, co-occur with undergoer focus suffixes. You can also get them with locative focus suffixes, with the locative focus suffix an, but it's less common. You can also get them in the agent focus, but that's also Well, it's pretty uncommon, but it's possible grammatically. For example, the verb stem tas'i would mean something like make or fix or make well again, or, well, if something is broken, to repair it. If you say patas'iun, that means to have something fixed. Patasi would mean to cause something to be made. Un prefix, well, that's just because you put stress on the thing that is being fixed. You can also get patasian. Patasian, I make something fixed, well, stay in a fixed spot. Again, this is very hard to translate in English, but it means, for example, suppose I have a Yaokongqi, how do you say that in English? A remote control, yes. And you want to fix it to the wall, that is patasian. So you want to fix it to a wall, but you don't do it yourself. I tell Dylan, put this to the wall. I patasian the remote control. You can already see that these constructions won't be very common because it's a bit of a funny. I mean, you need a very specific context to have this kind of stuff going on. So I said they're semantically causative, but syntactically it's not really clear that they're so causative. Because whenever I ask my informants, well, if it means I will have it fixed, then you can say patasiun ak, first person, and then they would, or patasiun daku, and they would say, no, that's very bad. I mean, you can't actually say that. I mean, yeah, it's understood that you have some kind of a causer, but in many cases, consultants, they don't want to have it explicitly expressed in a clause. And that's especially the case if you have transitive dynamic events, and also if your undergoer in this case, or the causee, is animate or human. But especially with transitive dynamic events. So in the corpus, I think, I don't know, I can't say it in percentages, but a vast majority of my causative constructions or causative forms occurs without any explicit arguments on the verb itself. If you have an explicit argument, it's usually expressed in a previous clause or on a previous verb or on a previous auxiliary or something else, but not on the causative verb itself. So just an a very realistic example in 26. Makai haida tan tunguka. If there is some visiting going on, literally, pisi halun palunko, you have to treat him well by causing him to sit down comfortably. Pa sihal badbat, you have to make him well by talking to him. Pa kaunan, and you have to give him something to eat in the eating room. So, no arguments in this clause, and this is a pretty typical takifatan bunun clause in stories, but also in daily conversation. Funnily enough, if you have causatives of adjectives or locative verbs, it's a lot easier to express to have an explicit causer on your verb itself. So when that happens, when you introduce a causer, then it always goes into the agent slot, and the agent of the original construction is kind of demoted to undergoer. To the undergoer slot. For example, in 27, na pun han nun daku ip kukuta patasiun. Na pun han, the first line is actually the most relevant one. Na pun han nun daku ip, I will take this thing to kukku to have it fixed. So that's where my patasiun, the form, came from, by the way. The normal form would be munhan, to go to, or to, yes, to go to. Causative allative equivalent, the causative equivalent of munhan is punhan. You have an undergoer focus here. You can express the causer, which is zaku, the first person singular, which is in a neutral case, so it's not focused upon because it's an undergoer focus construction. And then you have a causee, ip, the thing. It's referring to, a vaguish thing. I'm not really sure anymore what it was. But it's not animate in any case. So I already said that if you can't really expressed, or if people feel that is, if people, I mean, if native speakers feel that it's not really a good idea to express an explicit causer on the causative verb, with the causative verb itself, that's usually solved by expressing it on a previous verb, in a previous clause, or in a serial verb construction, or in something like that. So in 28, Lusku'un vaku inak haku punhan ba'af. Now the problem with punhan ba'af, you want, actually the speaker wants to say, I put the traps, the animal trap, the snare, sorry, up into the mountains. But it was a bit difficult to put in the agent and then daku and then the patient inak haku and then ba'af all on one and the same verb. So what did he do? He kind of created a second, a preceding sentence, lusku'un daku inak haku. I moved my snare, or my snare, the snare was, my snare was moved by me, punhan ba'af. It was caused to go up into the mountains. So I put the snare up into the mountains. So that's all I have to say for now about these causatives. And we're
10 more minutes.
Wah. Then I have to go very fast. I'll do. If it's okay, I'll go to page 18 to the transitivity, and then we can discuss a bit. So what's argument, what influenced argument alignment so far? That was the focus suffixes, the verbal prefixes of different kinds, and now a third thing that influences how arguments express argument alignment is usually, I mean, the expression of arguments. If you express arguments explicitly, that by definition influences how they are aligned. So in Takivatan, the normal argument order is from high to low agentivity. So in you normally have agent, instrument, beneficiary, patient, location, and then all kinds of peripheral arguments. Now, it looks like you can get very long, very complex clauses in Takivatan. That's not the case. In about 80 to 90% of all clauses, there is no explicitly expressed argument or one explicitly expressed argument. You can get two explicitly expressed arguments, but that's already a bit dodgy for some consultants, and three explicitly expressed arguments is very, very rare. It can only occur in certain situations. More than three is impossible. I mean, every construction that I tried to make with more than three arguments was rejected. People couldn't make any clause with more than three arguments, and I don't have them in my corpus, so it's kind of, I mean, unless they show up in a couple of years, I'll assume that it's impossible to have this. Then three arguments are only possible in certain constructions. It can only happen when you can't have ambiguity about the semantic status of these participants. So if you have two human participants and you want to express both a beneficiary and a patient, and it's kind of difficult to know which one would be the beneficiary and the patient, you can't express them both in the same clause. You can't have it with bulky arguments, so you can only have three arguments clauses if all your arguments are only one word, so that's typically a pronoun or one or a single noun. You can't have them with complex noun phrases. And you typically only have them when one of the three arguments is a bound pronoun. So you have two free constituents and one bound constituent. One example in 29, and I really had to wait very long before I got this example. Na iskalatun daku tuknat asu. So I give the bone to the dog to bite it. How do you, I use the bone. I use the bone to have the dog bite it, something like that. But it's already, I mean, it's not something you would use any day, every day in any conversation. Now, if one argument is expressed, you would wonder, I mean, how do you know whether it is the agent or the undergoer? And it usually depends on the semantics of the whole construction and on the pragmatic context as well. So if you have one highly animate argument, it's typically the agent, not always, but most of the cases. If you have something like ludakun bunun, so you have an undergore focus of ludak, to beat, and the bunun, people, they're always the agent, they're almost never the undergore. Or, well, actually, my consultants say they have to be interpreted as the agent. So, sorry, what do I say here? You are beaten by some person. Yes. So the bunun are the people that do the beating. They're never the people that get beaten up. Conversely, if you have very lowly animate participants like Kaimangsu Thing, they are usually interpreted as undergoers. So if you have Tukluun Kaimangsut, the thing has been covered up. So the thing will always be interpreted as the undergoer and never as an agent, because things typically don't do a lot of covering up. Well, in 32, I'm going to skip that, because they're actually in different grammatical and syntactic slots, and you can prove that if you introduce pronouns or other explicit participants. Now, you wonder then, I mean, some concepts, some events, you really want to express more than two participants. You want to say, I give something to you, or these kind of constructions. What do Bunun people do? Well, first of all, they infer a lot from the context. Second of all, if you really want to express them, you can do something like in 33 or 34. In the 33, what you have is an auxiliary verb, modal auxiliary, which causes the agent to be shifted or to be repositioned from the main verb to the auxiliary verb. So, maktu as pasimul daku aimangsut, can you borrow me this thing or the thing? So it would be very difficult to express, or people would find it not very elegant to express as on the pasimul, so they move it forward to the auxiliary, and all the two other arguments, they stay with the main verb. Another option is to create a serial verb construction, which is kind of the, instead of adding an auxiliary at the front of the construction, you can add an extra verb at the end of the construction. So you can transform the 33 into 34. Mak tuas pasimul kaimangsut isaif daku. Can you borrow a thing to give to me? And this is actually the construction that most Bunun people would prefer. A nice, simple construction where each verb has one argument. That's kind of the standard case for takifaten. You can also do, and that's just, it's not really relevant maybe for the argument alignment, but it's very funny. You can get very bizarre solutions for the too many argument problem. In 35, ma na kaimangsut yasin saif ipi bunun. The problem was na kaimangsut was a pretty long NP, in the sense that it's more than one word. It has a possessive attribute. And the problem with possessives is that they are sometimes also in a neutral form, so there is a bit of problem to, I mean, the nak should, you could interpret this in some situations as a possessive attribute to Kaimangsut, but it could also be an undergore of some kind, because it's the same case form. What happened here was that the sinsaif ip bunun was just kept in the same place, so these arguments and the verb was kept there. Kaimangsut was a bit too long to put into the second line, so what they did was they verbalized the pronoun, manak became manak, and kaimangsut became an argument of the verbalized pronoun. So manak would mean something like being mine or belonging to me or something like that. So the thing belonged to me, and then they just made it into a subordinate clause to the main clause. And the thing belonged to me, other people have given it to me. So that's just a little sidestep. Then, I'm going to go very, very quickly through the free pronouns, because then you have the complete view. Do I still have time for...
Well,
now we are, you know, using the time from discussion session. But, you know.
Do you want me to stop, or I want
to
stop?
You can take a few minutes to conclude.
Okay, I'll do the free personal pronouns very quickly. That's my conclusion then. So you have many, many free personal pronouns in Bunun. We're not. If you look at table 3, you see that you have the bound forms. We're going to ignore them for now because that gets a little bit more complicated then. Let's only take the neutral and the F, the N and the F forms, the neutral and the focused agent forms. Locative and possessive forms are very interesting, but they're not very special. They're just morphologically complex, and you can, locative pronouns add an, possessive pronouns have a prefix e, and that's about it. Now, the difficulty with them is that they distinguish between this neutral form and this focused agent form, and the neutral form marks almost everything except for the focused agent. So neutral forms mark focused undergores, so topicalized undergores, non-topical undergores, non-focused agents, and disregarding of which argument it is. If you left dislocate an agent, an argument, then it's also in a neutral case. So you get a very strange split that does not really correspond to anything in traditional concepts of transitivity. Like, it's not a nominative system, it's not an ergative system, it's, from a pronominal point of view, it's something in between. I have all these examples here, but I'm going to skip them. Now, the free focused agent form is only used for focused agent. It's only used for focused agents, but only in emphatic context. In all other contexts, you would get bound pronouns. The bound pronouns, I'm going to say this very quickly, are usually also used for focused agents, except in some undergore focused constructions where they can refer to focused undergores. It's very complicated, and there are a couple of smaller pronouns that do other things. Now, a conclusion, what does that mean for transitivity? Well, there are a couple of problems. You had this three-way system between an agent focus, undergore focus, locative focus, which is relevant for all verb classes, which is relevant for whether verbs are typically transitive or non-transitive. Then you have this strange argument order, which prohibits the expression of more than three arguments, but in many cases more than one argument. And which prefers actually that only one or zero arguments are expressed on a verb. You have all these verbal prefixes that have certain semantics that look like causativization or topicalization, but that actually don't allow you to explicitly express the topicalized or the topicalized participant or the causer. And then you have these personal pronouns that have a case marking split or a distinction in case marking that doesn't really correspond very well to any traditional concepts of transitivity. So what I would propose is that transitivity in Bunun can't be explained in any very simple way, but it's just better to analyze these different subsystems and then see how they interact, and that's how you can explain the whole thing in the most elegant way. That's everything for now.
Thank you. Yeah, I think Rick has painted a very interesting picture of how this argument aligns and works in the known. So, any question or comments? 大家有什么问题?
Think I see.
Very interesting talk. You began by saying that you were going to not use what other people have said about focus and all those things. You're going to focus only on this dialect of Bunun. But then you use terms such as locative focus and undergore focus, which are, with reference especially to the so-called locative focus, I think there's a problem here. In that it seems that you have assumed that locative simply means location, mm-hmm. Whereas what we find, and I'm not sure to what degree here in Formosa languages, but especially in the Philippines, that although an unsuffix can specify a location, it more typically, when it's used with verbs, specifies an undergar which has been surface affected, is not entirely affected usually. And so this brings me to the point of wondering why, in some of your examples, that you say you've got a locative focus thing, mm-hmm. but you don't have a core argument which is locative, but you do have arguments which, it seems to me, for example, number 15, I wonder why the word soch is not the undergoer, I mean, it's not the affected undergoer here, locatively affected undergoer. It's the thing that is moved into something or replaced, if you like.
Yeah.
And similarly, in number 12, I wonder why the words my clothes are not considered to be the locatively affected undergoer. So let me leave it at that. There are many other things that I may wish to talk to you about later, but let me leave it at that for now.
Yeah. In case of 15, I think you could very well be right. I don't really have a good explanation for this construction. In the case of the clothes, that was contextually determined. I mean, it was clear from the context that they were talking about a certain place they wanted to go to.
So would it be possible then, do you think it would be possible to topicalize or front my clothes or not?
We are talking about example
number 12.
Mita hulu saka vavana balivan. I think so, yes.
Which would then allow
wait a second.
To be interpreted as a topic, right?
Mita hulu saka vavana balivan. Yeah, it's difficult. I'm not really sure here. I'll have to check it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can, of course, say that I think it can be topicalized, but usually the speakers normally have a different opinion than me. So
it can be topicalized, what does it imply?
Then Laurie would be right. Okay. If it could be topicalized in this construction.
This should be the subject?
Yes.
I have a question. On page 17. Example 42, through days and analysis of this form, and you think it's a combination of undergoer focus, wound plus the focus form of first person singular up.
Yes.
But in living languages, we have a combination of this wound suffix plus the full form. Genitive pronoun, and
I think
historically it's probably came from the genitive form rather than the focus form, because you also find similar form in not just in Philippine languages but also in Tao. Tao have ik, because the schwa reflex is e in Tao.
So cool, the genitive, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's something that I will add to my.
One very short question, Henry.
I'm interested in the your verbal prefix, in particular the prefix sin. On the table one.
Yes. Yes.
And it seems to me it's quite rare in other Formosan language. I don't know whether it is present in Philippine language or not. I mean, this is kind of what you call resultive object orientation.
Call it resultive
kind of
object. Yeah.
To me. And you illustrated the prefix with example 21 and 35.
Yes.
21 and 35 actually are identical, right?
I think so. Yeah, yeah.
So let's look at the example 21. I'm curious, what do you mean by resultive object orientation.
Ah,
the
yes.
Resultive prefix sort of usually attached to, I mean, across the language, usually attached to a sort of a stative verb, something like that, right? Here, you attach to the scene prefix attached to a diatrisic verb. So I don't know what you mean by resultive object orientation.
Well, the funny thing is, when I first saw all these forms with sin, and they're quite common in Takivatan, and I'm not really sure about the other Bunun dialects, they always seem to have some kind of strange perfective-like meaning. And I think I know what you're going to say. Some people have suggested that actually sin is kind of some kind of contraction of is and then the infix in, or something like that. But what they seem to indicate in Takivatan, and you can argue about that, is they refer to an object that has been, that is created by, or how do you say that, completed by the event expressed. For example, sin saif api bunun, the api, if you would say masaif api bunun, it would mean something like people gave it to me, masaif bunun api. The sin saif expresses that the api is already in my possession, so I completely have it already. So the saif is actually...
Does sin saif occur in Riyas context?
I don't see why not, but I'll have to check that as well. Nasin saif, yeah, well, it's difficult to say because irialis, and you could have it in future, and then it's kind of...
Yeah,
mm.
Yeah, maybe yeah. We can have discussion afterward. Since we have a class, I think we should end here, and let's thank Rick. Any other question you can ask Rick after this session?
Thank you.
Well, by email.
Yes, very nice.
Yes. Can you see this in Takivatan? Naki Saif, sorry, Naki Saif, I think, in the future tense.
You ask me if you can say that or say.
Because in Dakpanua, and also other kind of temple dialects, I can say Makpanua.
Yes, but the problem is that I took a